Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and My Time Capsule is the podcast where my guest tells me the five things from their life, four things they cherish and one they loathe and would like to get rid of, that they would, if given the chance, put in a time capsule and bury. And as the title suggests, I give them that chance. My guest in this episode, I'm delighted to say, is the actor Simon Williams, who is probably best known these days for playing Justin Elliott, Lillian's latest partner, in the BBC's very long-running serial, The Archers, which may make this episode doubly interesting for any Archers fans, as I used to be Lillian's latest partner. And talking of latests, The Archers is just the latest act in Simon's extraordinary career. He was educated at Harrow, but that's not his fault. He first appeared on television in 1967 in Man in a Suitcase, but his big break came when he was offered the role of James Bellamy in the TV series Upstairs, Downstairs, appearing in 37 episodes over the next 4 years. He's been in loads of things since then. Here's a sample. Binder, Bergerac, Dangerfield, Dinner Ladies, Doctor Who, EastEnders, Heartbeat, Doctors, Kingdom, First Among Equals, and Sir Charles Merrick in Holby City. He's been in the films The Prisoner of Zender and The Fiendish Plot of Dr. Fu Manchu with Peter Sellers, as well as Jabberwocky, The Odd Job, Return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E., and Chariots of Fire, to name but a few. He was joint chairman of the Actors Charitable Trust and still works tirelessly for that and several other charities. He's performed in a myriad of plays all over the world and has written quite a number of hit plays himself. Simon is married to Lucy Fleming, the daughter of Celia Johnson and the writer Peter Fleming, which means her uncle is the James Bond author, Ian Fleming, just in case you wondered. Now, unfortunately, the sound on this episode can vary in quality, as we had to use two different recordings when one just, well, just stopped. Isn't technology wonderful, whilst at the same time being a bastard? Still, let's waste no more time and hear the delightful Simon Williams, or as his friends call him, Sam, and the things he'd like to put in his time capsule. Okay, Sam, what would you like to put into the time capsule?
Oh, my time capsule will need to be very, very big. I'd like to put in my time capsule, I don't know, all the usual things that everybody must say, the lots of first kisses with the darling women who've been in my life, obviously foremost Lucy, the birth of my children, some extraordinary moments of good news when people have come round from difficult situations, survived near deaths, getting good reviews. one of the most extraordinary moments was when I went to a clairvoyant at the age of 18, and she said to me, oh, how interesting, you're one of twins. And I said, no, I think you've made a mistake there. I'm a Gemini, maybe you're muddled. She said, oh, that's odd. I mentioned it that night to my mother, and she said, oh, well, it's no big deal, but I miscarried your twin at 4 months. And as you know, you were premature. You were born at 7 months.
Wow.
And so you should have had a little twin brother. And it was the most extraordinary moment for me, because suddenly this phantom companion I'd had all my childhood, my sort of invisible buddy on my shoulder, was a possibility, was real, or should have been real.
Mm.
And it really was an extraordinary moment in my life.
Had you felt his presence all the time then, do you think?
I thought all children had a kind of a phantom, a buddy who they shared things with, who played games with.
Yeah.
But I actually had one. And so I like to think that if I'm a bit low ever, I think it could have been me who was slipped away and perished.
Mm.
And so I've got to live life for him as well,
yes,
as myself.
Medically, that's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I mean, that's a long time ago, Sam.
Yes.
And so to miscarry a child at 4 months. So were you in separate parts of the womb, or were you in the womb together?
I didn't actually go into the details.
Okay.
I mean, suffice to say, my mother had a miscarriage, and the doctor came the next day and said, funny thing, there's still one there. You must have been having twins. And the twin was me. So I feel very lucky that he sacrificed his space within my darling mum for me, that's all.
To survive, I know. He sort of remained with you as well, has he?
It would be fanciful to say that he's there all the time.
No.
But I do reflect on how lucky I am, and that I never feel that alone.
No.
It sounds a bit fanciful. I don't want to go too far down there, but it was a very extraordinary moment. And other extraordinary moments I might put in my time capsule. I remember so many visits to my dad, who was the actor Hugh Williams, in his dressing room. And I just remember thinking, some people talk about acting, they fall in love with it, but I just fell in love with the building. There was a smell in the theatre that I just loved, a smell of, he wore Leichner makeup, and he smelt of Craven A cigarettes, which he smoked, and there was a smell of scenery and of old theatres and the musty smell, and he would take me out onto the stage and I'd just look at the empty theatres, and they just, gladdened my heart, and I thought, this is where I really, really want to be.
It's funny, isn't it, that actually quite often an empty theatre is more exciting.
I've had so many, usually on matinee days in the middle of August.
Yes, indeed, haven't we all? Do you know, I'm just going to pick you up on something. You pronounce it Leichner. I've always called it Leichner.
Leichner.
You would know more than I would.
Leichner number 5 and number 9 was what he always wore.
Yeah.
One was white, and he'd mix them in for a healthy look.
Yes.
Leichner.
Leichner.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then there was something called Crow's Cremine, which was a kind of cream you removed it with. In the early days, when I was in rep, they used to put a red dot in the corner of your eye.
Yes.
Because it made you look sort of healthy and unanemic. The old character actor I shared a dressing room with would teach me, when you were playing older parts, you'd take a sixpenny piece and you'd mark it with the dark makeup to draw the lines on, so they weren't continuous. They were kind of slightly serrated. My early days in rep were just the happiest, happiest time.
Where did you do rep? All over the place?
Or? Sort of weekly rep I did in Worthing, under a wonderful director called Malcolm Farquhar. And we did, it was a play a week in those days.
Yes.
And you'd have a read through on Tuesday morning. You'd block act one in the afternoon, act two the following day. By Friday, you were doing a run through. Monday, you did a dress rehearsal in the afternoon, and you opened in the evening. It was probably acting by the seat of your pants. It was all a little bit approximate.
Yes.
And obviously, there were a huge number of wonderful cock-ups. But it was an adventure, and I was just overjoyed to be in the building.
And, of course, you were not only rehearsing during the day. You were performing at night.
Well, I was, but I was also an assistant stage manager, so I was quite often on the prop book and making props and rushing about the town, borrowing things needed for the production on my little, had a little tiny mobilette, it was called, a little small motorbike. It was the happiest time. My honeymoon, my long romance with the theatre, it was the honeymoon.
Yes. I mean, there is nothing better as a young man than being busy, is there, with something that you love?
Yes. I mean, because you can sleep for 5 minutes on a stone floor and wake up completely ready to go again, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So your father, he must have worked with some extraordinary people, because I always think that that journey that is made over just a very few generations that take you to people that almost seem mythical.
Yes.
These actors that are, you know, from way back.
His career was, could have gone better. It was, his career was interfered with by the war and by being divorced. And he had difficult decisions, as we all do in this business. We have difficult decisions to make. But he had lots of very dear friends in the theatre. Olivier was a wonderful friend of his.
Really?
He did the address at my father's memorial service. They did Wuthering Heights together.
Wow.
My father played the drunken brother, Hindley, and he worked with Michael Wilding in An Ideal Husband. He did lots of movies. He had sort of skirmishes with Hollywood. But then after he was bankrupted in about the early 50s, he took to writing plays with my mother, most notably plays like The Grass is Greener and The Flip Side. And he was, so all through my childhood, he was pretty much always in the West End doing drawing room comedies that he'd written with my mother.
How marvellous.
Yeah, that's how my childhood was.
Mm. Mm. So you've sort of taken that on board, haven't you, really? You've written a number of plays.
Yes, I seem to be trudging wearily in my father's footsteps. I love him to bits. You can probably see him up there. There's a picture of him and me doing a play. It was a play he wrote. We only worked together once. A play he wrote when I was just newly married the first time.
Mm.
And he wrote a part and we did the play together. And we had a fabulous time rehearsing it, and with Gladys Cooper and Faith Brooke and my then wife, Belinda Carroll. And we had a wonderful tour. And sadly, when we came into London, he died during the first week of the run.
No.
And so, well, it's sad, but it's also wonderful that I had the chance to work with him the once.
Yes.
And having begged me not to be an actor, he had come round to the idea. And we just had the best time together.
Yes. What did he do during the war then?
He was in a communications group in the army called Phantom, which operated communications mostly in North Africa and in northern France. And he didn't talk about it much, but I know he travelled about with a chicken in the back of his Jeep, and he would trade the eggs for men's whiskey. He liked a whiskey. And he was one of the first people in to Belsen at the cessation of hostilities. And he said he could never forgive, and he never did forgive Germany for the atrocity there.
No.
And it was always tricky. I mean, he would go into quite a rage at the sight of a German car or the sound of a German conversation on the beach. It was a problem for him.
I've come across a few people like that. I worked with a barrister many years ago.
Yeah.
He had his QC taken away, his Queen Counsel, because he chased a German car that cut him up on the Strand. And this poor German was driving the car. And at the time, you could drive right round Trafalgar Square. You'll remember that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this poor German got so confused when they got to Trafalgar Square that he went the wrong way round Trafalgar Square, causing chaos. But this barrister continued to chase him.
Yeah, yeah. The war wasn't over for him.
It wasn't over for him. I think he was cited in the trial, as they could hear him as he was going along behind, making noises.
Yeah, I was like that with my dad, I'm afraid.
Yes, there were a number like that. Oh, it's marvellous. Well, I mean, even though it's really tinged with that sadness of...
It was, I suppose, one of the things I wouldn't want in my time capsule would be the memory of going on the night after he died with the understudy. That was not very good, wearing my dad's clothes and speaking his lines. That was a pretty horrible night.
Yes. Oh, my word, that is extraordinary.
Mm.
And that idea, yes, the show must go on, rather than everybody saying, well, your father's just died, don't do it.
The show must go on is one of the great load of bollocks, yeah, produced by producers to try and make actors play when they should be home in bed with a temperature, or they should be hugging their loved ones during a time of bereavement. The show must go on is nonsense.
Yes, and yet we all fall for it. I did exactly the same thing when my mother died. The next day I was on stage.
Yes.
And halfway through it started singing a song, which was rather sad and about somebody going away. And I couldn't even sing it. It was, and I thought, what am I doing here?
No.
It's madness.
I remember looking across the stage at Gladys Cooper, and she was sounded absolutely fine, and she looked great from a distance, but close up all through the performance, there were tears just rolling down her face. She absolutely loved my dad, and I loved her too. She was wonderful.
Yes.
But my childhood was littered with all sorts of my dad's friends, Jack Hawkins, John Mills, Valerie Hobbs. Valerie Hobson I was taken to meet. We went to see The King and I, and I was taken round to meet her in her dressing room afterwards. And there, to my astonishment, she took off her hair and then she took off her hips, you know, those great big, huge bustle things she wore.
Yes.
And there she was standing in these knickerbockers and beaming down at me with this grotesque makeup on, saying, "Hello, Simon. I've got a son called Simon too." And I thought, love.
No.
There was nothing else I could possibly do but work in the theatre.
Yes. And then, of course, after that, your sex life was never the same again.
Well, that's another matter. That's a late night programme.
Indeed. Okay, well, I'm going to put all those happy memories, but maybe I'll just put that photograph of you and your father on stage.
Yeah.
Because that'll bring the whole thing back to you, I think.
It was a very special first night we had together when we opened in Brighton with the play.
Mm.
I didn't come on till the second act. He had to let me onto the stage, and I came on in the most wonderful tailored suit. And it so happened that as I'd been in rep in Worthing up the road, a great many friends were in the audience.
Mm.
And as I came on in this suit, the audience gave me what they used to call an entrance round. Yeah. They started clapping. And my father gently turned his back to the audience and said, "You little fucker," with his back to the audience, with a beam on his face. And we then played the scene together.
Oh, how marvellous.
And it was a wonderful... they call it rites of passage moment, but it was a lovely moment. I'd have that in my time capsule now.
Yeah, that's fantastic, you little fucker.
Should I say it again without fucker?
No, I like it. I like it. I like the
okay,
fucker.
You can have fucker, can you?
You can have that. Yes, it's marvellous. All I have to do is put a little E next to this episode and then we can get away with anything.
Good, good, good.
And also, it's so real. That's a father, in a way, demonstrating, you know, in a very amusing way, the pride that he must have felt, the joy at that moment. He must have known the significance of it.
It was especially poignant, the pride, because he had absolutely begged me not to be an actor. Said, "Look at me, here I am, an undischarged bankrupt at 65. You know, for God's sake, find something else to do. Be a wine merchant, be a mechanic, be anything, but don't be an actor."
Yes, I've been told that, but mostly by directors.
No, you are absolutely born to be an actor.
Sadly true.
And a good one, too.
Okay, well, there we are. That's it. That's in the time capsule. That's lovely. What else would you like to put in there?
We're going to take a short break here for some adverts, although it might just be silence. It's a fickle world. We'll be back in a second.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back. Right, let's pack up our adverts in our old kit bag, and we won't dilly-dally on the way as we hurry back to find out what else Simon Williams would like to bury in his time capsule.
Am I overloaded already?
No.
I would just want a video of the last 35 years I've spent with Lucy, because they've just been great fun. I mean, she's a really most wonderful person to spend time with, so I'd like to have that in my time capsule. I could watch it again and I could interrupt her and switch her off when necessary. And, we were great friends before we got together as man and woman, me the man. don't be stupid. And so I think a marriage based on friendship, firstly, is rather a good foundation, really.
Yes.
He's my best friend.
Did you do a play together, first of all, or a television?
We did. The first play we did together, Lucy and I, was Hay Fever with her mother, Celia Johnson, back in 1967 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And somehow I felt instantly head over heels in love with her. But there comes a point when you have to mention this to someone.
Yes.
You have to say, oh, actually, I'm crazy about you. But I kind of missed the moment, and we became very good friends. We were always, Celia and she in the cast, we were all going out together. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll just have to be her friend.
Yes.
And we were friends. I went to her wedding, and I was godfather to her eldest daughter. And it was only 10 years later, when we were both in marriages that were unsuccessful,
mm-hmm,
or not working at the time, that we got together not in a kind of splendid kind of first love kind of way, but in a kind of rather tail between the legs kind of way. So we had a very quiet wedding in the registry office with her two boys and her son and daughter. And they weren't paying any attention. And halfway through, I heard one of them say, can't we go to Smith's now? But it was a very special moment.
Very romantic, yes.
Yeah, romantic as romantic does, you know.
Yes, I like your sort of romance. I mean, I know you are a romantic man, but I like the fact that you poo-poo it.
Yes.
You know.
I think another moment I might have to have. Shall I ramble on with my capsule? My capsule is already huge.
Okay, but I am noting the fact that you're poo-pooing my offer to examine your character.
Good, good, good.
Beautifully poo-pooed. I'm just going to let you put anything you want in there, and because I think they're all delightful.
I think the two occasions I've, both my son Tam and my daughter Amy followed me into the theatre, and in their case, on their mother's side, they are sixth generation show business.
Wow.
And it was just great working. I've done quite a lot of work with my son Tam, and he, having gone the proper route of acting, having been to drama school, actually knows how to do it, knows the process. I've learned, I think, probably more from him than I did from my father, who just seemed to have picked it up as he went along after Raga. And sharing gigs with him on the road, we did a production of Tartuffe together, and I somehow became his butler on the road.
Yes.
I would say, here's your tea, it's time to get up, we've got a matinee today. He'd go, oh, Dad, leave me. And then I wrote a play called Nobody's Perfect, which was quite a big success. And there was a part of a grumpy young daughter that the main character had, a character that I had to play. And Andy de la Tour, who directed it, said, we're auditioning for the young girl. Don't you think your daughter should audition? And I said, well, I hadn't thought of it. He said, isn't it based on her? And I said, yeah, I suppose it is. Anyway, she auditioned, and of course she was wonderful, and she got the part. And we had a wonderful time.
Yes, the sixth generation carrying on. When would that go back to? Was that like as far back as the 18th century then?
Yes, however many greats ago, they were on my first wife's mother's side. They went back to touring managers, and then they owned a string of theatres in Southsea and Portsmouth, and they went right back.
So your father saying to you, I don't think you should become an actor, was almost absurd. You were destined to become an actor.
Yes, I really don't know why he bothered to put himself in so much debt to get me to go to a public school. And all I really wanted was to be put into a suitcase and taken on tour, really.
Yes.
Education was completely wasted on me. I hated all the teachers I had. I hated boarding school. I hated being away from the dog and the family. Mm. The teachers after the war, for the most part, were very, very cross, angry, bad-tempered people who seemed to hate children and hate the subjects they were teaching.
Their life had been ruined sort of by the war, and they came out of the war.
Yeah, they were. Yes. They were all scarred and limping and damaged and just bullies, really.
Yes.
I look at the way children are educated today, and it's so full of excitement and adventure and exploration, and they come home eager to get online and find out about stuff, and I missed all that. I just wanted to get out of school and be a grown-up, and, you know, I didn't want to live with just boys my age.
No.
Still don't, really.
No. It's very strange, isn't it, that thing, because I do remember those teachers as well, all of whom had, to a large extent, I suppose, getting through the war, they probably suffered in order to get through it. You know, they went through something traumatic, and there was never any help for those people, and they let it out of themselves by getting a revenge on the children they were teaching.
I mean, imagine being able to hit. I mean, the number of times I was hit over the head, I before E, except after C, and all that rubbish, and 9/8 and 72, and bang, 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 and bang, my little pink National Health spectacles would fly across the room. You know, they were just ghastly.
Some people would say you still remember those things. So
Yes. I still have to look it up, but I've got Google. When I had my first book published 20-odd years ago, my copy editor said, "Someone damaged you terribly. All you seem to be worried about is whether I'm going to correct your spelling. I don't care about your spelling. Anyone can spell.
Yes.
What you could do is write a story."
Yeah.
And I went, "Oh, right. Somebody should have told me that."
A long time ago. Indeed.
Yeah, a long time ago. Put a great red line across my best writing. Very painful to me.
Yes.
I think I'm probably nowadays happier as a writer than I am as an actor.
Mm. You know. That thing of somebody not recognising something in what you're trying to do when you're a child is very painful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it does stick with you. We had a writing competition in my English class where the title of the essay was "Why I Like Going Up to Bed." And I wrote a long piece about looking at the stars and how wonderful it was, and how, but occasionally in the winter it was terribly cold, and it seemed absurd. And then I said, but the real reason that I enjoy going upstairs to bed is because I live in a bungalow. And
so you had a lousy sense of humour even then.
Even then, I was after the poor joke.
A very good joke.
And the teacher put a red line right through the whole thing.
Oh, I would have given you 10 out of 10.
Yeah?
I don't know. I think the sheer wonder of seeing a child begin to achieve something, anything, is just tremendous. I feel so sorry for the kids today, especially with these hideous mess they're making of the education department at the moment.
Mm.
I just feel very sorry for kids who don't know where they want to go or what they want to do. They don't believe in the future. They don't believe that the world's going to go on.
No, it's awful, isn't it? And yet you constantly see the opposite, which is, you know, for example, we both have grandchildren and we like spending time with our grandchildren.
Yeah,
and then constantly things happen to them that you just, they make your heart burst with joy.
Yes, absolutely burst. Yeah, I think it's even more miraculous than being a father, being a grandfather. I mean, you kind of feel, oh, I could go now, you know.
Yes.
I don't want to go now. I don't.
You don't have to. Not immediately after this interview.
No, good,
you're not getting a flight to Switzerland. Don't worry.
Think of the money you'd make with that.
Do you think I should make these recordings and then wait and make every one of them posthumous?
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. The posthumous podcast. You just do a lot of recordings and then wait for people to die.
That's what you could call it, waiting for people to die. There's my other hero up on the wall there.
Yes.
Dickie Attenborough.
Did you work with Dickie?
I never worked with him, but I was involved with Denver Hall, the Actors' Retirement Home, with him and what used to be the Actors' Children's Trust, and a lot of theatrical charities with him. And he was just a sensational man, a role model of how to be of service. He believed in being of service, of paying back, all that stuff. Richard Curtis is one today, for instance.
Yes.
He was of his generation. God bless him. Mm.
Yes. A lot of them were like that, though, as far as I remember. They had a view of the world which was the way society worked, was that it was up to you to pay back.
But in the days before there was a formal taxation system, the norm was that you would simply give 10% of your income to the church, and they would dispense it to cover doctor's fees and education and looking after the local community.
But the great problem is that there are all these people now that have these extraordinary sums of money and actually don't see it as their duty, or they don't feel the need to help other people. They sort of say, well, it's mine.
Yes. The redistribution of wealth, the levelling up of the playing field, is taking a long time to happen.
Yes.
I mean, we have people drowning, crossing the channel to try to get to the land of milk and honey that they think our country is. Mm. I don't know how long it will take to put that right, or if we ever will.
No.
We mustn't get too philosophical here.
No, indeed. Let's not get too depressed about it either, because if anything, like all these things, it's not going to be up to you and I.
Well, maybe you a bit.
Somebody younger is going to come up with a brilliant idea, and suddenly the world will seem much simpler.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is to capitalism.
No.
You look at your share portfolio and you think, no, maybe I'll leave it as it is.
I don't look at mine. I look at yours. Okay, right. So we do have to put something into the time capsule that you're happy to get rid of from your life.
I'm happy to get rid of. Against all odds, because I'm very squeamish, I did the poo test for bowel cancer about 6 years ago, and they caught a bit of cancer in my colon.
Yes.
Good and early. And I still seem to be clear of the damn thing. And I would like the whole episode of that time in my time capsule.
Yes.
I'd like, when they tell you that you're going to have a bit of your gut removed, I'd like that removed. But I would like to leave a little message, a little post-it to the world saying, if you get the test, do it.
Do you know what? I sit here as a man who's had that test sitting on his desk for about 3 months. So I'm not going to do it now, not in front of you.
No, I would hate that. I wouldn't want to watch that.
No.
I've seen your work. I don't want to see that.
But I am definitely going to do it today at some point.
Yes.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. I don't know what it is about, well, about me. What is it about me to not do that?
It's fear. It's fear.
Yes.
Anyway, I was trying to think of other things I didn't want in my time capsule.
No, it's fine. One is enough. That's enough. One is good enough for me.
Good.
Let's go through it. You had your twin. Then there's the photograph of you and your dad together on stage. You had your life with Lucy. The whole thing on a video. And then, of course, working with your son, Sam, and your daughter, Amy. Mm. And then the bad thing, which is your poo test. So, yeah, I think we've done it.
Good. God bless. Love to the family.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Simon Williams. This was a cast-off production, and the producer was John Fenton-Stevens. The music is by Pass the Peas Music. You can follow My Time Capsule on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You just search at MyTCPod. And if you've enjoyed it, then please subscribe on Acast or your usual podcast provider, where you can rate us and maybe leave a review. And you can listen to all past episodes of My Time Capsule. In fact, there are very nearly 100 episodes available. Well done, us. Yeah, Simon is episode 97, so we've only 3 episodes to go. So, subscribe now to hear our special 100th episode, as well as guests such as Stephen Fry, Rebecca Front, Arthur Smith, Mark Gatiss, Anna Tuzinski, Rufus Hound, Anthony Head, Chris Addison, David Baddiel, Maria McCurlin, the Reverend Richard Coles, Lucy Porter, Justin Edwards, Yes, I am going to do them all, so you can skip forward if you want to. But if you want to hear the rest, here we go. Griff Rhys-Jones, Andy Hamilton, Richard Herring, Tony Gardner, Rachel Koo, Janet Ellis, Miles Jupp, Paul Mayhew-Archer, Natasha McElone, Ahia Shah, Daddy Waters, Judy Graham, John Lloyd, Steve Edge, Rick Wakeman, Rita Rudner, Dean Truss, Craig Ferguson, Ellie White, Russell Grant, Tom Goodman-Hill, Tony Hawks, Kevin McNally, Clive Mantle, David Mitchell, Annika Rice, Catherine Mayer, Robert Bathurst, Jan Ravens, John Chalice, Jay Griffiths, Tim McInerney, Jimmy Mulville, Stephen K. Amos, Michael Maloney, David Jason, that's Sir David Jason, and Dan Schreiber. That's the first 50. Here we go. Athena Kublenu, Danny Wallace, Shane Ritchie, Arabella Weir, Milton Jones, Dune McKagan, Andrew Hunter-Murray, Ailey Doyle, Fred McCauley, John Owen Jones, Rory McGrath, Jade Adams, Andy Osho, Lee Mack, Kevin Bishop, Robin Ince, Clive Anderson, Caroline Quinton, Vicky Pepperdine, Mark Thomas, Nigel Planer, Rachel Paris and Marcus Brigstock, Tim Bendink, Mark Watson, Aurora Burkhart, Sean Walsh, Darren Litton, Anna Chancellor, Chris Lang, Ed Byrne, Romola Gary, Tim Vine, Izzy Mant, Howard Goodall, Giles Paley-Phillips, Rob Brydon, Kate Thornton, Ken Bruce, Simon Evans, Charlie Higson, Josie Lawrence, John Bradley West, James Moore, Les Dennis, Alex Lowe, Bonnie Langford, and now Simon Williams. Not bad, is it? Next week we've got... Oh, bloody technology.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.